Well, hello and welcome to the Backtracker History Show podcast, brought to you by me, Alice, where together we'll go rummaging through the archives to discover intriguing tales about people and events that occurred in the past. Each episode is a podcast-friendly version of a show that has been aired on Bradleystoke Radio in Bristol, England, all of which will be brought to life by an array of amazing voice talent from across the world. We have stories about a huge variety of subjects, from activists to war heroes, creatives, and of course, murderers. We have it all, so get ready for the latest installment of the Backtracker History Show, bringing the past back to life.
From 47 on the line, and this is the Backtracker History Show.
In this week's episode, we continue with tales from the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, or the RNLI, because they're celebrating 200 years since their foundation. So, if you haven't already, I suggest you go back and listen to the first part. One of the biggest rescues the RNLI took part in was during World War II. Now, in the early part of the 1900s, when World War I and World War II were in effect, the RNLI faced unprecedented challenges. In World War I, lifeboat crews valiantly launched 1,808 times, rescuing 5,332 individuals amidst chaos of naval warfare. Notable missions included the arduous 50-hour rescue operation of the hospital ship Rohilla, which foundered in 1914. This was a sea disaster which one survivor claimed was worse than the sinking of the Titanic. Yet the story of the SS Rohilla, which ran aground just a mile from Whitby 100 years ago, with the loss of 85 lives, is largely untold. During World War I, the hospital ship HMHS Rohilla, carrying medical staff, set sail on the 30th of October 1914 from South Queen Ferry, Firth of Forth, bound for Dunkirk, to evacuate wounded soldiers. However, it encountered a devastating turn of events. The ship ran aground at Saltwick Nab, a reef approximately a mile east of Whitby, North Riding of Yorkshire, during a particularly fierce north-northeast gale. Compounding the peril, the lighthouses remained unlit due to the war effort. The reef, situated about 400 yards offshore, caused the ship to break its back upon impact. Captain David Lanners Nielsen, misjudging the vessel's location, believed they were far from the Yorkshire coast, relying on their last known position off the Northumberland coast. Meanwhile, Albert Jeffries, the vigilant Whitby Coast Guard, observed the Rohilla's alarming course towards the rocky coastline, known locally as Whitby Rock. Despite Jeffries' Morse code signals, the Rohilla continued its ill-fated path. At 4 a.m, disaster struck as the ship collided with the rocks near Saltwick Nab. Captain Nielsen, fearing a mine strike, faced a critical decision: either beach the ship to maximize survival chances, or just hope and pray there'd be better conditions for evacuation. Opting to beach the ship, Nielsen's decision proved fatal. The vessel struck a large wave-cut rock with immense force, fracturing its infrastructure into two pieces. Tragically, the ship was only miles from Whitby's jagged rocks, unbeknownst to the crew. As the ship broke into three sections, the stern sank rapidly, claiming most lives aboard. Those remaining were left stranded as the wreckage disintegrated over three agonizing days. Crowds gathered atop the cliffs, witnessing the unfolding tragedy with horror, the calamity seemingly within arm's reach.
Word of the Week.
And this week, the word I give you is Yarborough, which I would have thought was a place in the United Kingdom, but it actually refers to when you are playing a game of cards and the dealer deals a hand without any numbers above 9. The Rocket Brigade, equipped with rockets and a bosun's chair, started the rescue operation. A line was attached to a rocket and fired over the Rohilla for the survivors to catch the line and secure it to something strong. The bosun's chair was then fitted to the line and passengers would be transported one by one to safety. Unfortunately, 3 rockets were fired, but all failed to reach the Rohilla, and the RNLI had to wait until dawn broke before sending out its first rowing boat. The Rohilla was taking quite a pounding from the waves. Survivors were slowly being washed over the side of the ship, and if this happened, it was very unlikely that they would survive because the choppiness of the waves would dash a person on the rocks, killing them instantly. Conventional lifeboats were ineffective because the sea was too rough.
Someone help me, oh God!
The vessel was dragged along the rocks opposite the wreck, and crew members rescued 35 of the 229 on board in 2 trips. The rescue services consisted of 6 conventional lifeboats, including the John Fielden and Robert and Mary Ellis. Unfortunately, they were ineffective because the sea was too rough. The second attempt was made to rescue another 18 passengers. The lifeboat was severely damaged and was abandoned. By Friday, there were still about 40 passengers on board the ship. Many locals had gathered on the clifftops to witness the horrific rescue scene. People were helpless. On Saturday, the gale continued to rage. The rescue attempt needed a motorised lifeboat. The nearest one was located at Teesside, about 30 miles away. And so the lifeboat Henry Vernon left her home port of Tyneside at 4:15 p.m. It had to sail down the coast to Whitby, and it took 5.5 hours before one boat reached the doomed ship to rescue only 17 people. Sunday marked the climax of the rescue mission as the Henry Vernon returned, saving the remaining 40 passengers. Despite the continued onslaught of waves and the poignant gathering of onlookers on the clifftops, the collapse of the poop deck symbolised the grim reality of the tragedy as it disappeared into deeper water, out of sight. One of the 5 women rescued was Mary Roberts from Liverpool. The stewardess had survived the sinking of the RMS Titanic just 2 years before. She would later describe the sinking of Rohilla as being more harrowing than that of the Titanic. Miss Roberts had survived being shipwrecked twice before and eventually went on to live to an old age, dying peacefully in her bed. During the Rohilla inquest, the jury found that in the light of the storm, absence of lights and the usual safeguards, Captain Nielsen was not responsible for the disaster. However, it was never explained why the ship was 7 miles off course. The jury recommended that passenger liners should be supplied with rocket apparatus so that the stricken ship could fire the line to the shore, almost guaranteeing being picked up by rescuers. The jury also recommended that a motorised lifeboat should be provided for Whitby. The Gold Medal of the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, the Institute's highest honour, was presented to Superintendent Major H.E. Burton and Coxswain Robert Smith of the Tynemouth lifeboat Henry Vernon, and to Coxswain Thomas Langlands of the Whitby lifeboat. The Empire Gallantry Medal, which was subsequently changed to the George Cross, was awarded to Burton and Smith in 1924. In 1917, a monument was erected at Whitby by the British India Steam Navigation Company, commemorating all those who lost their lives in the tragedy. During World War II, the RNLI faced significant challenges, especially in areas at risk of enemy attacks and invasion. Despite the constant threat of mines and downed aircrew, RNLI crews bravely rescued 6,376 lives during the war. This highlights their steadfast dedication to maritime rescue, even in the midst of worldwide conflict. Between the 26th of May and the 4th of June 1940, as part of Operation Dynamo, the little ships of Dunkirk, which were about 850 private boats, helped rescue more than 336,000 British, French, and other Allied soldiers who were trapped on the beaches at Dunkirk during the Second World War, and the RNLI were right there in the thick of it. Here's a part of an article about that astonishing mission.
19 RNLI lifeboats sailed to Dunkirk between 27th of May and 4th of June 1940 to assist with the Dunkirk evacuation. Lifeboats from Ramsgate, the RNLB Prudential ON697, now Tremilia, and Margate, RNLB Lord Southborough ON688, went directly to France with their own crews, Ramsgate's crew collecting 2,800 troops. Both coxswains, Edward Parker from Margate and Howard Primrose Knight from Ramsgate, were awarded the Distinguished Service Medal for their gallantry and determination when ferrying troops from the beaches. Of the other lifeboats and crews summoned to Dover by the Admiralty, the first arrivals questioned the details of the service, in particular the impracticality of running heavy lifeboats onto the beach, loading them with soldiers, and then floating them off. The dispute resulted in the first three crews being sent home. Subsequent lifeboats arriving were commandeered without discussion, much to the disappointment of the many lifeboatmen. A later RNLI investigation resulted in the dismissal of two Hythe crew members who were nevertheless vindicated in one aspect of their criticism, as Hythe's Viscountess Wakefield was run onto the beach at La Penne and unable to be refloated. She was the only lifeboat to be lost in the operation. Some RNLI crew members stayed in Dover for the emergency to provide repair and refueling facilities, and after the end of the evacuation, most lifeboats returned to their stations with varying levels of damage and continued their life-saving services.
Now, as part of the 200th anniversary celebrations, the RNLI station at Portishead opened its doors to let us have a little look behind the scenes. I got to meet lots of lovely volunteers, including Lou and Jem, and here they are explaining their journeys into volunteering for the RNLI.
So I started as an education volunteer about 8 years ago, I think, and through that I was watching the shore crew and boat crew and what they did, and I just thought, I need to be doing that, I need a challenge in my life, I wanted to serve the community, and I just thought there's no way they're going to take me because I'm early 40s. Quite small, no maritime experience. They must be mad, and actually they did, with open arms, and I haven't really looked back. I absolutely love it.
So I joined the crew because I think there's something inherent in human nature to try and help other people, and people volunteer for all kinds of stuff. They volunteer in charity shops and serve teas at hospital and stuff, so I think we just try and help people. And for me, the RNLI is a great volunteer force. I've always had a maritime interest, surfing, sailing, diving, anything. So for me to be able to volunteer doing something I enjoy doing, it's great.
The most significant rescue in the RNLI's history happened when the 12,000-ton liner SS Sovik collided with Menhir Reef near Lizard Point in Cornwall. It left Australia on the 2nd of February 1907, en route to Liverpool. The Sovik carried over 400 passengers and crew, along with the 12,000 tonnes of cargo, valued at £400,000. On the 17th of March, the ship approached Cornwall's hazardous Lizard coastline amidst a violent gale, rough seas and dense fog. Captain Thomas Jones relied on Lizard Lighthouse to navigate these perilous rocks of the Lizard. Mistakenly believing the light was at least 10 miles away, Jones powered ahead at full speed. 20 minutes later, the ship ran aground against Menhir Reef. 10:30 p.m., the engines were halted and distress flares were launched, although heavy fog obscured visibility. Captain Jones ordered the ship's lifeboats to be deployed, but their awkward position on the rocks hindered many from being lowered. Only experienced local sailors could navigate through the narrow channels to safety. By 4:25 a.m., two RNLI lifeboats had arrived, with three more en route. The dense fog caused the first lifeboat to collide with the side of the Sovik, but as the sun rose, visibility improved. Crews from four local lifeboat stations repeatedly rowed out for 16 hours to rescue all on board. The crew, facing the open sea and ferocious winds in open boats, saved 456 lives, including 70 infants. Six people, including two Soviet crew members and two members of the Kadjwith lifeboat crew, Edwin Rutter and Reverend Harry Vivan, were awarded silver medals for gallantry by the RNLI. And as a side story, there was controversy at the time over the conduct of two Salvation Army officers who were among the passengers. A letter from Captain T.J. Jones and Chief Officer A. Holner of the ship was published in the Globe on Saturday the 30th of March, 1907.
To the White Star Steamship Company, Liverpool. Gentlemen, in reference to Salvation Army officers, I gave an order that no men were to go in any boat without my consent, and the chief officer, who was superintending the loading of the first and second boats positively, asserts that no Salvation Army officers went in any boat until I gave an order that men could do so.
And that settled that controversy. The wreck swiftly became a notable tourist attraction, drawing an impressive 10,000 visitors in just a single day. Stranded on the rocks for 3 weeks, the undamaged stern was salvaged while a new bow was constructed in Belfast. With meticulous precision, the ship was split in two using carefully placed charges of dynamite. The salvaged two-thirds of the vessel were transported to Southampton, where the new bow was attached. By January 1908, the restored steamliner Sovik was returned to the seas, and during the First World War, she served a vital role, transporting British troops and essential supplies, including frozen meat. In 1928, Sovik was sold to a Norwegian company and repurposed as a whaling factory ship, and her name was changed to Skytrun. Tragically, during World War II, while fleeing a German vessel off the coast of Sweden, Skytrun sank. Her wreck remains submerged to this day, marking the end of her storied maritime journey.
Word on the street.
Today we are going to Gerrish Avenue in BS5, Bristol. The Gerrish family owned a great deal of property in the St. George area of Bristol. Their house, Bellevue, stood on the corner of Whitehall Road and Gordon Road and was said to have been moved stone by stone from another site. It was demolished in 1925. There's also a Gerrish Avenue in BS16, which is built on the site of Albini Gerrish's market garden. Whilst I was at the Portishead lifeboat station to celebrate the 200th anniversary, I met Mike Roberts, who's the president of that particular station, and I asked him if he had any historical tales he could share with us. And this is what he said.
Well, thinking back in terms of history, long before this lifeboat station existed, going back now to 1893, there was a sailing vessel which came across from Jersey, and as it got here to Portishead, it ran into a horrendous storm and the boat ran into real difficulties. It was sinking, and two guys living here in Portishead saw what was happening, and they jumped into a rowing boat and they rowed out into the storm three times and saved all the crew from that boat. Subsequently, they were awarded medals by the RNLI, who came to hear of what they'd done. And in fact, we're delighted that we've just got hold of one of those medals and the citation to the other guy, which we're going to put on display here in the lifeboat station. That was John Bunt and John Flory were their names.
Well, I don't know about you, but that sounds like a really interesting story. So I'm going to be going off and finding out more.
Oh, Santiana gained a day.
Away, Santiana!
Napoleon of the West, they say.
Along the plains of Mexico.
Well,
heave her up and away we'll go. Away, Santiana!
Fast clipper ship and a bully good crew.
Away, Santiana!
And an old salty Yank for a captain too.
Along the plains of Mexico.
Well,
heave her up and away we'll go. Away, Santiana! Heave her up and away we'll go. Along the plains of Mexico.
Well, Santiana fought for gold. And snow.
Along the plains of Mexico.
Well,
heave her up and away we'll go. Away, Santiana. Heave her up and away we'll go. Along the plains of Mexico.
'Twas on the field of Molly Del Rey.
Away, Santiana.
Both his legs got blown away.
Along the plains of Mexico.
Well,
heave her up and away we'll go. Away, Santiana. Heave her up and away we'll go. Along the plains of Mexico.
It was a fierce and bitter strife.
Away, Santiana.
The General Taylor took his life.
Along the plains of Mexico.
Well,
heave her up and away we'll go. Away, Santiana. Heave her up and away we'll go. Along the plains of Mexico.
Oh, Santiana, now we mourn.
Away, Santiana.
We left him buried off Cape Horn.
Along the plains of Mexico.
That was Santiana, sung by the 85ers, a group consisting of six active RNLI lifeboat crew members from Portishead, including Jem and Lou, who you heard earlier. If you found these tales of daring by the RNLI interesting, then you might be interested to know that I covered a rescue that happened at Robin Hood's Bay near Whitby on the 19th of January, 1881. The episode came out last April and is available wherever you get your podcasts or at the Backtracker website at www.backtracker.co.uk. On the day that the charity turned 200, the RNLI revealed its volunteer lifeboat crews and lifeguards across the southwest had saved an incredible 16,028 lives during its two centuries of life-saving. That's just the southwest. And for over two centuries, the RNLI has stood as a stalwart guardian of the seas, its presence felt from the craggy cliffs of Cornwall to the serene beaches of the Channel Islands. Since its establishment in 1824, the RNLI's intrepid crews have launched their lifeboats 55,912 times, embarking on perilous missions to rescue 14,967 souls. Meanwhile, lifeguards integral to the service since 2001 have answered the call to 176,585 incidents, pulling 1,061 individuals from the clutches of the waves. In total, across the UK and Ireland, 146,452 lives have been saved by the RNLI. This equates to an average of 2 lives saved every day for 200 years. The charity has a strong presence in the southwest, with 33 lifeboat stations and 89 lifeguarded beaches during the summer season. Cornwall saw the first RNLI Gallantry Medal for lifeguarding when in 2003 Rod MacDonald was presented with the Bravery Award for a particularly challenging and selfless rescue of a bodyboarder in Newquay. Another rescue that occurred in the southwest happened in 2008 in Torbay, where the RNLI went to rescue the 20-person crew of the Ice Prince, a cargo ship which had got into difficulty 31 miles out in the English Channel. In storm-force winds, the crew arrived on scene, supported by Solcombe RNLI and the Coast Guard helicopter, and discovered that the boat was listing and was at severe risk of sudden capsize. And so for nearly 2 hours in atrocious conditions, the Torbay RNLI volunteers were able to take 8 crew members from the Ice Prince, with the Coast Guard helicopter India Juliet taking the remaining 12. The casualties were taken to hospital and all, luckily, recovered. Following the rescue, the Torbay RNLI crew involved that night were all recognised for their bravery, receiving the RNLI Thanks of the Institution Vellum Award, and later attending the GMTV Pride of Britain Awards in London and winning the Emergency Services category. And the Solcombe lifeboat crew all received the RNLI Chief Executive's Letter of Thanks. 2 centuries have seen vast developments in the lifeboats and kit used by the charity's lifesavers. From the early oar-powered vessels to today's technology-packed lifeboats, which are now built in-house by the charity. And from the rudimentary cork life jackets of the 1850s to the full protective kit each crew member is now issued with. And they've got some successful tales in fundraising. For example, in 1886, 27 lifeboat crew members from Southport and St. Anne's lost their lives while trying to rescue the crew of the Mexico. A public appeal was launched, driven by local man Charles McCara. An 1891 appeal raised £10,000 in 2 weeks. On the 1st of October, Charles and his wife Marion organised the first Lifeboat Saturday. Bands, floats and lifeboats paraded through the streets of Manchester, followed by volunteers collecting money. More than £5,000 were taken on the day, which was the first recorded example of a charity street collection. Now, before we move on, here's a bit of advice from Mike Roberts, the president of the Portishead Lifeboat Station.
I suppose one of the most important things is to try and get yourself just a little bit educated about things like tides, know the environment that you're in. You'd be surprised how many people get into trouble and really don't know why when it first happens. Yeah, it's only afterwards they realise that perhaps some things they should have learned.
Three little words. Some people wait years to hear them, but those three little words could be the most important three little words you'll ever hear. Make you feel as light as a feather, sweep you off your feet. Ready? Fancy a coffee?
Over half of us have felt lonely at some point. Lift someone out of loneliness by reaching out for a catch-up. It can help you feel less lonely too. Search everymindmatters.com/loneliness to discover lots of little things you can do to help lift someone out of loneliness.
Isn't it fascinating how everyone has heard of the historical figure Karl Marx, but no one remembers his sister, Anya, who invented the starting pistol.
Back in the day facts.
And so, we'll start with the 9th of March, 1562, when kissing in public is banned in Naples. In fact, it's punishable by death. On the 10th of March, 1922, Mahatma Gandhi is arrested in India, tried for sedition, and sentenced to 6 years in prison, only to be released after nearly 2 years for an appendicitis operation. On the 12th of March, 1968, Mauritius gains independence from the United Kingdom. On the 11th of March, 1914, Rupert Brooke's poems, The Dead and The Soldier, are published in the Times Literary Supplement. The poem The Soldier is famous for its opening lines, "If I should die, think only this of me, that there's some corner of a foreign field that is forever England." In 1996, on the 13th of March, the Dunblane massacre leads to the death of 16 primary school children and one teacher in Scotland. The 14th of March, 1757, on board HMS Monarch, his own flagship, British Admiral John Byng is executed by firing squad for failing to come to the aid of a besieged British garrison during the Battle of Minorca at the beginning of the Seven Years' War. He had sailed from Minorca at the head of a hastily assembled fleet of vessels, some of which were in poor condition. In the ensuing battle with a French fleet off the Minorcan coast, he was defeated and the fleet under his command considerably damaged. He then decided to return to Gibraltar to repair his ships. When he returned to Britain, Byng was court-martialed and found guilty of failing to do his utmost to prevent Minorca from falling to the French. He was sentenced to death and, after pleas for clemency were denied, he was executed. And lastly, on the 15th of March, 1943, Sylvester Stewart was born in Texas. He's better known by his stage name, Sly Stone, and is an American musician, songwriter and record producer, who is most famous for his role as frontman for Sly and the Family Stone. Well, you crazy kids, I'm afraid that's the end of this week's show. And a huge thank you has to go out to all the volunteers at Portishead's RNLI station, who made us feel very welcome and even gave us cake. I hope you enjoyed today's show and found out a little bit more about a national institution. And in response to Terry Lynch, yes, there will be a true crime episode occurring soon. Thank you once again for listening to me, Alice, on the Backtracker History Show. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can find me on Twitter or Facebook by looking up at Backtracker UK with a capital B, a capital T, and a capital UK. I also occasionally post onto TikTok and Instagram. So do come along and find me, because it's amazing to hear from you and get some feedback or even ideas for future shows. As a small independent podcaster, your help and support is always appreciated. And one way you can do that is to rate the show wherever you get your podcasts. Leaving a review also helps, as it gives other people an idea of what the show's about. The show is regularly released on Mondays. So until next time, guys, take care and look after each other.